Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics, and on this podcast, we give you expert advice so you can have an amazing sex life, whatever that looks like to you right now in your own unique way. This episode is brought to you by Cocoon, a new web browser that gives you absolute privacy and security. Go to getcocoon.com/edu to download the browser for free so you can stop worrying about who's looking over your shoulder at your browser history once and for all. And on this episode, we're going to be talking about why that's kind of important. Thank you, Cocoon, for supporting this podcast. You can find a complete podcast archive over at pleasuremechanics.com. And while you are there, go to pleasuremechanics.com/free and sign up for the Erotic Essentials so we can deliver our best sex advice straight to your inbox. We're asking our podcast listeners if this podcast has made a positive difference in your life. Go to patreon.com/pleasuremechanics and pledge $5 a month so we can have a stable monthly income from this podcast that will allow us to outsource some work, continue to build more resources, and grow. Thank you to everyone who has stepped up and supported us. We're gathering a lovely community on the Patreon page, and we're excited to be in dialogue with you. Today's episode is part of our State of Affairs book club. State of Affairs is Esther Perel's new book. She's an amazing sex therapist and writer, and her new book is all about infidelity. And as she points out in the book, everyone has been touched by infidelity in some way. You don't need to cheat or have been cheated on in order for infidelity to affect you. It affects your friendships. It affects families. It's really just a force of human love and sexual mating that we need to deal with in a more realistic way. A lot of our conversations about infidelity are kind of limited and not very helpful. And so this book really expands the conversation about infidelity and gives us tools to have healthier, happier relationships. It's not really all about cheating. It's about how to be more realistic and more honest and authentic in our expectations of long-term love and monogamous love. So today we're going to be talking about explicit monogamy and how to have explicit, detailed conversations about what monogamy means to you, because it's not quite so simple as it turns out.
And having these conversations can really strengthen your relationship and be a piece of preventing infidelity. Perel talks in her book about how most of us have more detailed rental agreements than monogamy agreements. And it's so true. Whether you get married or not, there's so much assumed about what being together means. If we don't really talk about these subjects, we can really hurt each other. And so having these conversations is so essential for strengthening our relationships. So let's dive in.
So even the word monogamy, its meaning changes over time. It's a cultural construct. It used to mean one person, one sex partner for life, and that was it. You were expected to have one sex partner, and monogamy used to be part of the marriage contract that was really about ownership of women and property and passing on your estate to your rightful heirs. And it was really about controlling female sexuality so men could guarantee that their offspring they were rearing with their resources were their own. And monogamy used to be an expectation that was really just for women, and then men could philander and do what they wanted with sex workers of various kinds or have mistresses on the side. Monogamy used to be part of the marriage agreement that was all about property. As the definition of marriage changed and became more about love, the definition of monogamy shifted to the expectation that once you were in the marriage contract, it was you and me forever, and we weren't going to have other sex partners, and that was it. And then when divorce entered the scene, it was one partner at a time. And so if you got divorced, it was fully accepted that you might then get remarried and enter another monogamous relationship. Serial monogamy emerged. And now we're at the point with technology that for the first time in history, you can cheat on your partner while lying in bed next to them. Meaning you can use your phone to be on dating apps, to be flirting, to be watching online porn, to be engaged in online chats, video chats, webcamming. All sorts of options now emerge that really question what the meaning of monogamy is. And so we really want to break this down and give you tools to have more explicit conversations about what your expectations around monogamy are, what your desires around monogamy are, why is it even important to you in the first place? And this is going to be one of a series of episodes inspired by this book, and we're having a discussion about all of this over on the Patreon at patreon.com/pleasuremechanics. And in December, early December, I'll be interviewing Esther Perel, and I want to know what you want to know after reading this book, after all of these conversations, what's left unsaid? And I'm starting a little list of questions, and I really want to push her because she does a lot of interviews. She's a big media presence, and I want to take her into territory not yet tread. That's my goal. So help me do that. Help me shape the conversation. And let's really explore this conversation about monogamy, infidelity, sexy relationships over the long term together at patreon.com/pleasuremechanics. Okay, so what are your expectations around monogamy? I feel like in today's world, there's often this pattern where you date for a while. At some point in that dating process, you have a conversation about, are you dating other people? Let's be exclusive. That exclusivity often then goes to moving in together and then maybe to a marriage contract. But that conversation of, you know, are you seeing other people? Are you having sex with other people? Doesn't always happen. And if it does happen, it's usually very cursory, a little, you know, a quick conversation, and then it falls to the wayside, and you assume so much about what that means and what monogamy means to you. And we really need to break this down because I've heard from people, we've gotten emails that feel like if your partner is masturbating, they're cheating on you. If your partner is masturbating to porn, that's cheating on you. And this can go on and on. There's all these little baby steps, and it's a slippery slope out of monogamy that people sometimes find themselves cheating on their partner without meaning to, or in that gray area of undefined monogamy, we find ways to betray our partner and then be able to say like, oh, well, we never talked about that. We never talked about having an online relationship, so I didn't know it was out of bounds. When you kind of know it's out of bounds and you are transgressing on purpose, but it's not explicit having a long-term affair with your coworker, for example. And so you have kind of an ethical out. And what I think is important here is just to be really explicit in your conversation so you know what's expected of you, and then you can relax. Because I think so many of us get into this frenzied, suspicious, questioning state with our partner. Like, are they being loyal? Do they have wandering eyes? And those emotions can get really toxic in a relationship. And instead of talking about it, we kind of feed the suspicion.
And that can be just toxic on its own, even though nothing is happening, but we're imagining, or
it can become a tool to use against each other and make accusations and make people feel guilty when they don't even know what they're guilty of. Right? So we also need to talk about the fact that monogamy is rooted in this idea of owning one another's sexuality. Whew. And this idea that once we're in a relationship, all of your sexual energy is for me. It needs to be directed at me. You can't be attracted to anyone else in the world. And expressing that attraction, feeling that attraction, fantasizing about other people is all out of bounds. And it's all about me for the rest of our lives. And I think this is a really unrealistic and unhealthy expectation.
Well, it's part of this romantic notion of love and long-term relationships that is really prevalent in our culture. there is partly this idea that if we are enough, if we are sexy enough, powerful enough, attracted enough, our connection is deep enough, that you will never need anyone else ever in your whole life. And that is a really hard bar to keep. Like, it's a myth.
And it goes beyond sex. Like, not only is all your sexual energy mine, but all of your emotional energy is mine. And you're only going to confide in me. And the idea of emotional affairs adds this other layer of infidelity into relationships, where if you get too close to your friend, or if you feel too, like, you're confiding in someone too much or telling them the wrong things, then you've betrayed some emotional contract between the primary relationship. This is a lot of pressure, folks. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing relationships buckle under this pressure and people feel trapped. And why are we having a construct of relationships that's about entrapment?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even the Spanish word for spouse is the same word for handcuffs. Right? And the ball and chain metaphor built into our understanding of marriage is this idea of entrapment and capturing one another and then holding them as tight as possible so they don't get away.
Locking them.
This is really fragile, especially in a world with so many options. Because it used to be, you know, you married a kid from your town and everyone else was kind of knit into this close community. And now you can pull up an app on your phone and have options for multiple sexual partners with a few clicks. And with that sense of endless possibility, endless options, the idea of finding greener pastures, oh, I can be happier with someone else, is always on the horizon. And so it becomes this kind of existential ennui of, if I'm not super happy and fulfilled in this relationship, I should burn it all down and get another relationship, or I should cheat and find an escape hatch and live this alternate life and find my escape through an affair. We need to rebuild the idea of long-term relationships from the ground up. And I think we're getting maybe outside the scope of this podcast. We should do a whole episode on this idea of what could a different version of monogamy look like. But if you find yourself in a long-term relationship and start feeling trapped, it's not just you. It's because our entire construct of relationships are about entrapment. So, we will come back to this in another episode because I think it's worthy of a whole conversation. But in our culture that defines monogamy as one sex partner at a time, and it's expected in long-term relationships, we need to get really clear about what that means for each individual. And you have the opportunity to start defining the terms of your monogamy in a way that you can both agree on and you can consciously and consensually agree upon. So things like masturbation and porn is where this conversation needs to start. Do you expect your partner to stop masturbating when you're in a long-term relationship, when you've entered a monogamy contract? What do their masturbation patterns mean to you? Does it matter to you if they masturbate on the same day you're expected to have sex? Does it matter if they masturbate when you're in the house versus out of the house? Do you care if they masturbate to porn or not? These are all conversations you need to have, and it may feel uncomfortable to have at first because we don't often talk about these things. But if you don't talk about it and then discover that your partner is masturbating for 2 hours a day after you go to bed and you get upset about that, like, how are they expected to know what your boundaries were when you haven't defined them? So talk about masturbation, talk about porn. How do you feel about them paying for porn? Using your communal financial pool to pay for porn. All right, let's take it one step further from porn. There's a great story in Esther Perel's book where a wife opens the door and sees her husband masturbating to what she thinks is porn online. And she kind of rolls her eyes and is like, oh, okay, you're masturbating again. And then the woman on the screen says his name. And it turns out he's not just masturbating to porn, he's masturbating to a webcam girl who he's having online chat with, who knows his name. And this sets off that emotional cascade of, you're cheating on me, this is infidelity, this is not okay.
Whereas he thought of it as customized porn, right? Was how he named it. And, you know, you can get both sides of that. But for her, once there was an interaction, even if it was online and paid, felt like an intrusion into their world and their unity. And, you know, I can see both sides there.
Right. So if you're interacting with a paid webcam girl, and webcam girls, for those who don't know, it's a genre of online sex work where girls sit in their bedrooms and chat with different guys online and have kind of custom interactions and help them masturbate and masturbate for them and do little performances. And
there's interaction.
Yeah, there's an interactive element to it, but it's not a relationship. It's not an ongoing relationship. But it can be. You can return to the same webcam girl and start developing a relationship with them over time. Does that change how you feel about it? Does it change how you feel if it's not paid versus paid? These are all nuances that everyone has a different emotion
to. Yeah.
And that's some really people, if it's paid and it's kind of commodified in that way, that keeps it safe and they get that it's just a safe sexual service. And maybe your husband or your wife has a fetish that you're really not interested in. So they can pay a webcam girl to show off their feet and indulge that foot fetish. And that's how he gets off. And then you don't have to do it. And that feels really comfortable to you. Other people, as soon as there's money involved, it triggers all these other ethical concerns and it takes it to a new level of infidelity. So you have to talk about this and you have to risk being vulnerable enough to discuss all these possibilities before they happen. Like, this has to happen early in the relationship and in an ongoing way. Because as we've said so many times, life circumstances shift. And with those shifts,
your needs change.
Your needs change, and permission might change. So let's keep going down this slippery slope of monogamy. But first, I want to take a moment to thank our sponsor. So thanks to Cocoon for sponsoring this podcast. Cocoon is a free web browser like Chrome or Firefox that solves three separate problems all in one. Cocoon gives you absolute privacy, total security, and global accessibility. When you're looking at porn, when you're doing your webcam things, you're not alone with that webcam girl. Your browser is tracking all of your actions and selling that data to the highest bidder. And not only is your data being tracked, it's being logged in archives on your computer. And we've heard from so many people whose kids have discovered their browsing history and found out that daddy had a foot fetish. And you don't want that to happen. You want privacy when you're online, and closing your browser and clearing your history doesn't always cut it. Cocoon uses new technology, so your browser history is gone. There's no track of what you've been doing, and it's the safest way to play online. Go to getcocoon.com/edu to download your free browser and wrap yourself in a cocoon of online safety. I love this name, Cocoon, because it really shows you that idea of wrapping yourself in this safe web. Go to getcocoon.com/edu and download this browser for free. So when you browse, you're alone in the world. Okay, so we've talked about masturbation, we've talked about porn, we've talked about webcams and online chats. Another area that monogamy comes up is the idea of fantasy. So is your brain space, is your fantasy life your own, and you can fantasize about whoever you want, however you want? Or if you're fantasizing about that friend or an ex-girlfriend or an old flame, is that cheating? This is a great conversation to have, and does it matter if you're fantasizing while you're masturbating versus fantasizing while you're having sex with your partner? For a lot of people, fantasy is fine if you're masturbating and you're doing your own thing, but some people feel like, if you're having sex with me, I want you to be thinking about me. And if you're fucking me and thinking about your ex-girlfriend, I have a problem with that. And we can't always help where our fantasies go. Sometimes in the middle of sex, our thoughts wander and our erotic brain is very creative sometimes. And so if you don't have permission to fantasize fully, you can have great sex and then feel guilty afterwards for what you were thinking about. And it's much better to have a conversation ahead of time and give one another permission to fantasize Or really say, you know, if you start thinking about your ex-girlfriend, then please stop. I'd just rather not have sex with you in that space. How do you feel about this?
Well, this is a complicated one for me, because I feel like you've always been like, just fantasize about whoever, that's fine. And I still feel like internally it feels like crossing boundaries. So I feel challenged by this one. But that's part of what's interesting about these conversations. You really discover what's going on for yourself versus in ways that you didn't, that you haven't thought about before. And it's really interesting to find out more about your partner and like, oh, why is that important to you? What do you enjoy about that? What's the turn on there? And to learn about yourself, because I think so many people think of all of these things that they're just things that men do. But you know what? Women have desires and women have...
Do they ever?
Yeah. And so it's interesting to look at this list and say, what do I want in this? Do I want to be doing any of these things? And what would that look like? And allow your own desire to be stoked and expanded in this way that maybe you never thought of doing some of these things because they felt out of bounds. But if they're not out of bounds for your partner or they want to do it, then... maybe you could explore it too. And so it's an interesting and important conversation to find out what's going on within you and within your partner. And of course it's vulnerable and scary to hear about what they are desiring and to find out where you feel tender. But your relationship will of course strengthen. There might be some harder moments, but if you can stick with it, you can get to a place of more closeness than before because you're really being open and vulnerable.
Yeah, and this is really all about boundaries and defining the boundaries of your relationship really clearly so you don't have to think about them all the time. And I like to use the idea of the electric fence. Mm. So when an electric fence goes up and the dog gets the shock collar, you find your boundaries sometimes in slightly painful ways. Mm. But then over time, when you realize where the boundaries are, that dog can be free to play in the yard without worry. Mm. And you start understanding where the areas of containment are, and that gives you a lot of freedom to play in that space. And next week, we're going to be talking all about jealousy and how jealousy can be a really useful tool rather than a monster, the green-eyed monster, as it's often called. And how do we use jealousy to transform a relationship and to give us really useful information within a relationship? So that's coming up next week. One place a lot of people stray is using online dating apps once they're in a relationship. And I didn't really understand this phenomenon. You and I got together before a lot of the online dating apps came out. I think before our relationship started 11 years ago, I went on a couple like MySpace and Friendster dates. But we were not single in the world of Tinder and Grindr and OkCupid.
Yeah.
So it hasn't really been part of our world. So I've really been trying to understand it and talking to people who are using these apps. And what a lot of people want is just the idea of possible options, the idea that people are attracted to them, to be able to browse through profiles and swipe on pictures and say, ooh, that guy's cute. Does he think I'm cute? There's something in that circuit, even if you don't take it any further, that validates your desirability and gives you a sense of erotic agency. And people often use dating apps and keep updating profiles in secret, even when they're invested in a long-term relationship and have no intentions of going on dates. But then their partners discover these dating profiles, or maybe you get too attached to someone you're chatting with within a dating app, and this emerges, and it feels like to the partner that you're looking for options to cheat, when you're really just looking for that sense of validation.
And desirability. I mean, it's such a central core erotic need / desire for many people, the experience of being desired. And that can be challenging to keep up in a long-term relationship. So you're looking for other places to feel desired. And that's an understandable configuration. But and maybe that works in your relationship or not, but that's a great thing to look at.
And so having this conversation, can I use a dating app just to flirt and to post my picture and look at other people's profiles? But where is that boundary? So sure, honey, you can have the dating app, but don't give anyone your phone number. Don't meet anyone in real life. Or, no, I'm not comfortable using the dating app at all. We live in a small town and people are going to see your photo up there and have questions about our relationship. Like, no, no way, no how. And these are the conversations we have to have about all of these little steps. Another place people like to explore is in fetish groups, websites about alternative sexualities, and having a profile on something like FetLife. And if your partner doesn't know about or doesn't approve or doesn't want to participate in some of your sexual fetishes and kinks, then having an online profile and being in these communities online can be one of the safest ways to give yourself permission to explore that kink, and looking at other people's photos and profiles and having discussions about whatever your fetish is might be a permissible way to keep that part of you alive if it's not being participated in by your partner. But again, having that conversation where you say to your partner, I'm really into puppy play and like seeing pictures of people with collars, and I really fantasize about being a puppy. And your wife says, I have no interest in petting a dog as my sex partner, like that. Human pretending to be a dog. I could have picked a cleaner example here. But whatever your fetish is, if your partner has no interest in it, then there's really two options. You can repress that part of your sexuality and try not to think about it at all, which doesn't usually turn out well. Or you can find an outlet for it online and have a safe space that that part of you is validated and shared by others. And just that might be enough to integrate that kink into your sexuality so you can continue to have a great sex life with your partner, but be kinky online in this contained community.
And ideally, your partner knows about this and is fine with it and encourages you to have this space where you explore it.
But that only comes through these conversations,
totally.
Right?
Totally.
And that conversation might be the hardest part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
And then she knows you have a profile, you take a few hours a week, you engage in it, and that's how you integrate that kink. So this is another place, is involvement in sexual community, alternative sexuality sites online. What are your boundaries around that? Now, moving away from the virtual world, we have to talk about monogamy when it comes to flirting with other people in public, being attracted to other people, giving your phone number to other people, developing friendships with other people. Because this idea, I think one of the things that's happening as we queer culture, as heterosexuality starts to get a little blurry, is it used to be fine if your partner had same-sex friendships and you would expect them to have intimate friendships and the guys go hang out with the guys and the women hang out with the women. But now people are friends with all sorts of genders and people are attracted to all sorts of genders and these binaries are breaking down. So what does it mean to you if your partner has intimate friendships with people of the same gender, people of opposite genders? Maybe she's bisexual and she has this really special girlfriend and they like to, you know, cuddle. Where are your boundaries around your partner's other relationships? And this is a big topic, but you need to be clear about it. And people sometimes feel like their partner is cheating if they just sit at the bar when they're traveling for work and have a drink with a woman and chat. And they think it's harmless, it's innocent, no one's going up to their rooms, no one's kissing. But if your wife is at home and doing the laundry and feeling overwhelmed with taking care of the kids when you're gone, and then you talk to her and you're like, yeah, I had a really nice conversation with this lady at the bar and she was telling me all about da 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 da, that can feel like a transgression. That can feel like infidelity. So what are your expectations when you're out in the world without one another? Who are you allowed to talk to? What kind of conversations are you allowed to have? Where does that boundary end? If you're a bisexual woman and you have a special girlfriend and there's a little spark there, are you allowed to go shopping together and change in the same dressing room? Are you allowed to cuddle on the couch? Are you allowed to exchange massage with your friends?
This allowed word is so complicated.
But it is about permission.
Yeah, both granting yourself, expressing what you desire and want, or figuring that out if you have no idea, and having an agreement, instead of it just being assumed that you are controlled. But it's just so...
It's intense.
It is intense.
But this idea of permission is about understanding what your needs are in the relationship, where your boundaries are, so then you can relax, have fun within those boundaries, express yourself fully, and not worry, not create guilt. But the other piece to this is it makes what is a transgression explicit.
Mm.
And then you know if you're transgressing, you're doing it on purpose, you're doing it willfully, you know you're breaking a part of your agreement, and instead of feeling ashamed, you can feel guilty. And that's a difference maybe we need to break down again in another episode. But so many affairs emerge, and Esther's book is full of these stories, and we've gotten so many emails that affairs emerge, and not everyone is clear when the affair began, what was infidelity in the first place, and it just gets so messy and so ugly. And we can hide behind this idea of like, well, I didn't know you thought that was cheating. If you know, if you're clear about your boundaries and you find yourself transgressing, then you need to look at, why am I doing this? Do I need different boundaries, or do I need a different relationship, or am I hurting my partner on purpose? And the thing with transgression and infidelity is some people find a lot of arousal and pleasure out of the cheating and out of getting away with something. And if you are one of those people and you know that about yourself, you need to be very careful with that energy.
That you like transgressing, that's like, erotic.
Yeah, like cheating, you like getting away with something, you like sneaking around, and that energy and that excitement of being secretive might mean something to you. And if you're building a relationship, because the thing here is we're not just talking about breaking one person's heart. Affairs can burn down families and communities. It can be financially ruinous.
Yeah.
The consequences are really big the deeper you go into a relationship. And you may not ever want to hurt your partner. You may never want to break their heart, but you find yourself trying to get away with something. And so how do you have that conversation? And how do you admit that to your partner? That I really kind of like the sneaking around energy. How can we make that work here, right? Or you just don't get into long-term relationships and you have to construct your life around a more philandering lifestyle. And that might be part of your sexuality, that once you're aware of it, you can try to control the consequences. Because that's, I think, what I'm really taking away from this book is the wandering eye, the desire for multiple partners, the desire for sexual novelty, the desire for adventure, the fact that you can meet someone in a coffee shop and just have a spark with them that you just need to pursue, and something in you comes alive, you don't feel lonely all of a sudden. All of these things are really inherent human experiences that have always been with us, and they're never going to go away. Meanwhile, we're constructing our entire lives and sense of identity and sense of self-worth and our family stability and our financial stability around this idea that we're not going to do any of those things.
Mm.
And that is just such a fragile, vulnerable place. And it's just a bad idea. Like, I came away from this being like, Charlotte, we need to rethink marriage. Like, what are we doing? Like, I feel like we're just setting one another up for disaster and setting each other up for heartbreak if we're not realistic about what this institution of marriage means, what monogamy means, and then have a really dynamic, flexible, honest relationship with it over time so we don't hurt one another.
But and so that we stay erotically alive and vibrant, because partly desire is where we have sexual autonomy. This was one of the ideas that Esther talks about in some places in the book, and I just think it's so true and so interesting that we feel like ourselves, we feel alive when we have something that's all our own. Mm-hmm. And that's really profound, and it is a way of creating interest in a long-term relationship, is having a little bit of privacy, not secrecy, but privacy around our own desires. And so giving each other permission to find spaces where you can explore your own private desires gives both of you a little bit more spark and a little bit more erotic energy. And that is awesome. And so learning perhaps in a way that you didn't know before that your partner is fine with you doing A, B, and C is so freeing. And you don't have to feel shame and guilt about something that your partner's actually fine with. So this can go all sorts of ways and turn out really surprising. And you just never know until you have these explicit conversations. But what does someone do when their partner is like, I don't want you to do any of these things, and gives you no space to have any kind of...
Well, then you might discover you're not compatible.
Or that somebody needs to stretch a little bit and be like, okay, well, what's the concern? What are you scared of?
What does that mean to you?
What's the risk? I do need to have some kind of place of sexual autonomy. Which ones of these can have a little bit of freedom, because I need to feel alive?
And this is why having the conversation early and often, because if you have it early enough, you might realize you're just not compatible and you start dating someone else, and you do that before you're a few years invested in a relationship. And I think that's really important.
And that's ideal, but many of our listeners are not going to be in that situation. They're 30 years in, and this is a new conversation, and you start where you are, right?
Yeah, and I think having this conversation, it's hardest in the beginning.
Yeah.
And what I noticed recently in our relationship is we've had these conversations ever since the beginning, because when we met, I was in a polyamorous, kinky community, and you kind of wanted to be more monogamous, and we had to really negotiate that and talk about that and decide what our relationship was going to look like. And then 11 years later, after years of these conversations and checking in, and, you know, we're immersed in this conversation because it's our job. But recently, there were some a little flare-ups of jealousy, I want to say, around new friendships that we were developing. And we were able just to really fluidly check in of where's that friendship going? And what's the boundaries with that? And how much time are you going to spend with this person? And we were able just to kind of clear the air at a really early stage so we could say to one another, like, this is what it means to me. Because this is the thing, is monogamy affects friendships too. Mm. If you meet someone new at work or out in the community and you're really attracted to them, it might be because they're just a great friend for you that shares interests and you can have great conversations with, and they're meeting a part of you that needs to be met. And this is how we're meant to be in community, is connected in intimate ways with lots of different people. And if you're so rigid about your monogamy that when you meet a new friend and feel that attraction, which can feel a lot like sexual attraction, this is that erotic place where it's about creativity and excitement and vitality. And if you confuse that with sexual attraction and feel like, oh no, I must be cheating and I have to rein myself in, you'll cut off so many potential friendships that could be so good for you and breathe new energy into your life and make you feel good about yourself again, which would be so good for your relationship and your family. Like, I think we all need that. And how do we navigate that? Or an old friend reemerges on Facebook, and maybe you fucked once in college, but you're so worried about this idea of reconnecting with an ex that you don't have a conversation that could advance your career or send you down a new path that you really should be on. And so I feel like being able to have these conversations and be really honest with it, and be able to say, like, yeah, I'm really excited about this new friend, and I think they're really cute and sexy, and we want to do this project together, but that's all it's going to go, and that's fine, right? Yeah, cool, okay, we have permission to move forward in this guilt-free way that allows you to bring yourself to that new relationship and bring all of yourself to all of your relationships. I think there's so much here about not feeling trapped and not feeling constricted and not feeling limited, because from that space, of course we want to escape and of course we want to lash out. And if your partner like is ignoring you for a while, and then your coworker checks in, it's like, how are you feeling? That emotional connection could feel like water in a desert, you know? And that is a slippery slope to a big affair that you never meant to have, you never wanted to have, you know, and it's, or even just like online contact, a webcam girl might be the person that's listening to you most and seeing you most fully and connecting with you. And that feels like this breath of fresh air in a stale relationship. So some of this is about keeping your relationship strong and paying attention to one another. But a lot of it is just not being in a cage. Because if you're in a cage and the door is open, you don't start looking for ways to pick the lock. You know what I mean? A relationship should not be about entrapping one another and containing one another. It should really be about supporting one another.
And choosing one another.
And choosing. And then this conversation about monogamy comes up to devotion, where it's, you know I have sexual options. I know I could flirt with a barista. I know I could seduce my coworker. But I'm choosing not to because it would hurt you and it would compromise our family and it would take too much time away. And then we become adults about it again instead of kind of
reactionary teenagery.
And we can make conscious choices. And then if the energy gets so intense and you have to say to your partner, there's something I want to explore that I can't deny anymore, let's find a safe outlet for this. And instead of, you know, sneaking around to sex workers to fulfill your fetish or having an affair where you feel seen finally, maybe you find a way to integrate whatever you need into your relationship and support one another in that growth so you get to have the benefit of it. If you support your partner in their erotic growth, in fulfilling their life mission, in feeling more emotionally fulfilled by multiple relationships, then you get the benefit of a more awesome partner.
You're not talking about consensual non-monogamy there, though. You're just talking about having an open
heart, an open mind. And I think we should talk about consensual non-monogamy because a lot of people are exploring it and it's a natural extension of this conversation. So let's, you know, talk about that in a future episode. But what I'm talking right now is about sexual autonomy and emotional freedom, so you can feel erotically alive in the world. And that's going to mean different things to different relationships and different individuals.
Yeah, I love that part, because I think that a lot of us do shut down possible relationships, moments, but when there is a spark or an interest, because we feel like we shouldn't, that would be bad, that would be overriding. And anytime, and over a lifetime, that's a lot of shutting things down because of what you think you should do.
Yeah, and you start feeling dead inside.
Yeah, and so really allowing for, as you're saying, really allowing for those moments to open instead, whether that's just in flirtation or if that's pursuing a friendship. There's so many ways that we can explore erotic vitality in a non-sexual way, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? Non-genital way, but we're still exploring an erotic connection lightly, for instance. So there's so much to explore. And when I just want to say about consensual non-monogamy, we're not recommending or suggesting that for everyone. I don't want you to think that that is our logical conclusion of how we quote-unquote should do life. That's not what we're saying. We're just saying it's one option on this spectrum that will work for some people and definitely not work for others, but it's just something we want to explore.
Yeah, and an idea here I want to put on the table, and we have to maybe return to it, is an option is sexual monogamy or erotic non-monogamy. And this idea of, I have sex with you, we share our bodies, we share a bed, my sexual energy is like directed towards you, but erotically, I feel free in the world. I feel free to make relationships with other people. I feel free to explore connections. I feel free to have pleasure that's not about you. And that boundary, to define that and to figure out what works for you both, whether that be online technology, relationships within your community, however that looks. I feel like we need to keep erotic autonomy alive at all costs. And figuring out where those boundaries are is what these agreements are all about. Okay.
And it's what keeps your relationship safe.
Yeah. So to help you with this process, I've created a little resource, and it's a worksheet and a conversation starters that helps you have a conversation and come to a monogamy agreement with your partner. Because I think we need these tools to help us get started in these conversations, to map out some of the options, and to bring up subjects that might be hard for you to bring up. But if it's on the worksheet and it's there to talk about, it's a gateway into having this conversation. So that resource is going to be posted on our Patreon page. patreon.com/pleasuremechanics. Get in our inner circle and you'll start getting these bonuses every week. We'll start giving you worksheets and conversation starters and bonus episodes and extra support around integrating these conversations into your life. Because that's our goal with this podcast, is we can talk into your ear holes, and we love doing it. Hello, ear holes. But our goal is that you take these ideas and integrate them into your relationship, into your conversations, into your community, and together we start creating a more sane sexual culture for us all. So I'm going to start creating these resources and posting them on our Patreon page, and then being there to answer your questions and have conversations with you about these ideas. And so this podcast can become really a launching pad for ideas that you can then bring into your life. Mm-hmm. So patreon.com/pleasuremechanics. We're asking for $5 a month. Buy us a cup of coffee virtually and be part of our inner community. And you'll also get an ad-free version of the podcast. So you don't have to listen to us talking about our sponsors if you don't want to.
Though we're only picking sponsors that we really like and respect genuinely.
Yeah.
We have had offers from other companies that we don't want to tell you about. So we're really trying to be selective.
You can't pay me enough to recommend that product, baby.
So we're only bringing you the best.
Yeah.
But
so patreon.com/pleasuremechanics, $5 a month gets you in, and we're going to have a great time there. And of course, you can always find us at pleasuremechanics.com, where you'll find a complete podcast archive, our online courses, and a wealth of resources ripe for the plucking.
Mm.
All right, I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics.
Wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.